Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports, right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be along with you on the afternoon drive. Yesterday was a lot of fun. We talked heavy football. Be it college or NFL, there was a lot of football to talk about. There's more to talk about right now. We're going to get to that in just a moment. But also coming up on the show today, we're going to catch up with Coach Todd Jeffs of the Emory Spartan boys basketball team. Tonight, Emory has a monumental game. They'll take on the Manti Templars. Right now, Emory at 0-2 in region play, Manti at 1-2. It's a really big night for Emory. They have to have this win. So we'll see if the Spartans can get rolling on the right foot. We'll talk to Coach Todd Jeffs about that. It's coming up in just a moment, plus a local sports recap. And we have another player profile coming up for you a little bit later on. Now let's talk NFL football. If you're a Denver Bronco fan today, you should be pretty happy and relieved at the same time. The Denver Broncos have reached an agreement with Bears defensive coordinator Vic Fangio. And to me, you knock this out of the park. There's a couple of hires that I just absolutely love. Green Bay bringing in Matt LaFleur. I'm a huge fan of that. Vic Fangio going to Denver. I'm a huge fan of that, especially considering that Mike Munchak was being interviewed or considered for the job. Fangio is going to get a four-year contract that includes a team option for a fifth year. Broncos general manager John Elway said he was looking for experience in the next head coach, and so he had chosen the most experienced candidate that the team had interviewed, and that's Nick Fangio. And to me, you look at the job that he has done with the Chicago Bears. I know the season ended prematurely for Chicago, but he was one of five candidates for this job. He's 60 years old. He spent all but one of the past 33 years as an NFL assistant, so he's got tons of experience. Never been a head coach at any level. But according to reports, he had face-to-face meetings with John Elway, and he made some strong impressions. Highly respected coach around the league. He took a Bears defense that finished 30th in the NFL in 2014. The year before he arrived, improved them to 13th last season, number one in the scoring defense and takeaways this season. Yes, it helped that they landed Khalil Mack, but there's a reason why the Bears went out and got Khalil Mack. It's because you have someone like Fangio there. To me, it's can't miss. Now, if you're a Chicago Bears fan, this again, to me, this is a good thing, right? Because you're now accumulating coaches. You're bringing in coaches that other teams are viewing as head coaching candidates. It's a great thing. And right now, everything is connected to Sean McVay as far as the young coaches go. Because Matt LaFleur has connections to Sean McVay. Cliff Kingsbury, he has connections to Sean McVay in a sense. So really, when you look at who's landing these jobs, there's connections everywhere, but it's from successful squads. And that's what the Bears had. They had a successful squad. Now, last season, Fangio did agree to a three-year deal to work alongside Matt Nagy, and that's void now. And the Bears will look for their next defensive coordinator. Rumor was earlier today that it would, in fact, be Todd Bowles. That's no longer the case. He is going to take the defensive coordinator job with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He's going to join Bruce Arians, who was on his way to Tampa. So to me, again, lights out higher. Tampa Bay, I think they did wonders. I'm not a fan of retreads in this day and age, but to me, Bruce Arians isn't really a retread because he wasn't fired in Arizona. He wasn't ran out. I thought he did a fine job while he was in Arizona. There were just some other things that played into him walking away from the team. So again, Denver, hands down, I think they get a great, great hire. They did a terrific job, and this is going to be the coach that will be solidified with John Elway's job. And that's why I said you can't go with Mike Munchak. You can't do it because if this next coaching job does not work out, the next coaching hire does not work out, John Elway's done in Denver as far as I'm concerned. And I hate to say that because I have said that this guy did a tremendous job in building up the Broncos, winning another Super Bowl with this team. I thought he did a terrific job, but it hasn't been good since. And so it was key that Denver get the next right guy. I think they did. I think Elway did a great job in landing Vic Fangio. Now, let's take a look at the Cleveland Browns, because they have a new head coach as well. And they go with Freddie Kitchens, the 18th head coach in team history. And this surprises me a little bit. Now, he was the interim offensive coordinator for the final eight games. And apparently that worked with his relationship as far as Baker Mayfield goes. Because whichever coach got this job, you better believe that Baker Mayfield had a say in it or approved it. The Browns didn't want to lose Kitchens. They denied him permission to talk to other teams about offensive coordinator openings during the whole interview process. But Greg Williams was relieved of his duties. He's now no longer with the team. And that seemed like a likely situation, that Greg Williams was going to be the next head coach for Cleveland based on the job that he did in the interim role. And I made this joke when Hugh Jackson was let go and Greg Williams was named the interim head coach. That situation is so toxic that you think that Greg Williams is going to be the solution to your problem? I was dumbfounded by that. And then he won some football games. And like I said, it looked like he would be the next coach of the Cleveland Browns. Greg Williams is not head coach material. I don't even think he should be allowed to coach in the NFL. And I've talked to several people that have had attended coaching clinics with Greg Williams, and they pretty much have solidified everything that I thought about Greg Williams. And you go back and you look at his history. Again, I don't even think he should be coaching. But this one, to me, surprises me a bit. Freddie Kitchens, now the new head coach of the Cleveland Browns. General manager John Dorsey said the day after the season that Kitchens had moved the bar on the offensive side of the ball, and that's what it took. Now, under Kitchens, Mayfield was pretty good. Baker Mayfield went 5-3, completing 68% of his passes, 19 touchdowns, 8 picks, and 5 sacks. Now, I think Mayfield looked more comfortable as the season went on. And we talk about the win-loss record, and while Hugh Jackson is no longer the head coach, Cleveland was close. I mean, they had a tie, they had a game against the Raiders that did not go their way. A couple of controversial calls in that one. So I look at the records and I say, okay, Cleveland was an okay football team throughout the year. But the offensive numbers did soar under Kitchens for Baker Mayfield. And again, I don't believe for a second that Mayfield wasn't consulted on who should be the head coach. Here's the stats. Weeks 1 through 8, Mayfield, QBR, 36. Completion percentage, 58%. Yards per attempt, 6.6. Touchdown percentage, 3.6. 9 through 17, and this is under Kitchens, QBR went from a 36 to a 70. Completion percentage, up 10%. Yards per attempt, up by 2. Touchdown percentage, doubled. Not a sexy hire. 9th full-time coach since the team returned to Cleveland. And the 11th, if interim coaches are included. Cleveland's had a hard time landing a job. Landing a coach for this job, I should say. But like I said, it's not a sexy pick, but based on the amount of success that Cleveland endured from week 9 to week 17, I don't think you could really get this wrong. I am very happy it's not Greg Williams. Let me put it that way. Let's move over to college football. Plenty to talk about there as well. Dexter Lawrence, suspended defensive lineman for the Clemson Tigers, announced that he will declare for the NFL draft. Of course, he failed a drug test testing positive for an illegal substance. Because of that, he could not play in either of the two playoff games. He's going pro. He's going to headline a group of 3 players to declare for the NFL draft out of Clemson today. Cornerback Trayvon Mullen and also Trey Lamar are going to join Lawrence in leaving school early. The whole Dexter Lawrence story was something that kind of dominated the airwaves for a while. Clemson was going to lose 3 players in the playoffs. How was this going to affect him? I believe that the majority of the national media severely underestimated the defensive front for Clemson. They didn't miss a beat without Lawrence. And that's not me saying he's no good, but it is me saying that Clemson is very deep. Now, Lawrence is 6'5", 340 pounds. Terrific defensive tackle. He's got massive speed. As far as the top 25 draft prospects go, to me, he's a top 15 pick. He was a starter since his true freshman season. He's been a force inside for Clemson over the last few years. But this is the big hit for Clemson. With Lawrence declaring for the draft, Clemson will lose all 4 of its starting defensive linemen. Clelin Ferrell, who looked great in the postseason, Christian Wilkins, and Austin Bryant, they were all seniors. So there's going to be some rebuilding, I guess, in a sense, for Clemson. Dabo's done a terrific job recruiting. They're going to be just fine. Curious to see how the process for Dexter Lawrence goes during the draft. Again, I think he's a top 15 player. I wonder if the suspension alters anyone's opinion, any teams, if they stray away from him. We've seen that happen with, like, Laremy Tunsil. Remember, Tunsil was projected to be, like, a top 5 pick. And the Dolphins grabbed him late. I think it was, like, 13 or 14. I mean, it was the Titans were actually considering drafting him one before they traded back. And they nearly got him, trading all the way back to, like, number 15. Curious to see how that works with Dexter Lawrence. Elsewhere, Jalen Hurts, quarterback for Alabama, has entered the transfer portal, which means he is going to be leaving Alabama as well. It is to his job. We all know that. I don't think that's a big surprise. Jalen Hurts will be leaving Alabama, playing his final year of eligibility somewhere else. Let's take a look at the schedule in the NBA. Plenty of basketball tonight. 5 o'clock start time. The Indiana Pacers take on the Boston Celtics. It's a big-time Eastern Conference matchup. We get Philly at Washington. The Brooklyn Nets will play host to the Atlanta Hawks at 5:30. 6 o'clock hour tonight, we get the Bucks and the Rockets. The Grizzlies will welcome in San Antonio. We get Cleveland at New Orleans and Phoenix at Dallas. 7 o'clock tonight, Orlando at Utah. Now, this game will not air on KOAL. We have Emory High School basketball tonight. But a 7 o'clock tip-off for the Utah Jazz. The Chicago Bulls will travel to meet the Portland Trail Blazers at 8 o'clock. And in the nightcap tonight, it's Pistons-Lakers. This game is on national TV. We've got a break for just a moment. Local sports, a lot coming up in that realm. We'll talk to Coach Todd Jeffs, give you the recap from last night. Plus, we have a local sports player profile straight ahead. It's a Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios when we return. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And we will begin on the high school basketball court, where last night on KRPX 95.3 The Peak, the Carbon Lady Dinos defeated the Union Cougars by a final score of 58-46 in a game that included a total of 67 foul shots. The Lady Dinos never trailed. They opened up an early 9-point advantage at the end of the first quarter, and they continued to extend that throughout the contest, earning their fifth region win of the season. Carbon was led by Jordan Bianco, who finished with a game-best 26 points, including 12 that came from beyond the arc. McKenna Blank chipped in with 13, and Abby Sacamano finished with 7. Union, on the flip side, was led by Reagan Anderson, who reached her season average at 12. Tori Ross finished with 11. Union made just 2 3-point shots on the evening. Again, the win moves Carbon to 5-0 in region play. They'll take the remainder of the week off before returning to the court next Tuesday on the road against American Leadership. Carbon currently holds a 3-game lead over Juab in the win column for the top spot in region 14, and they are the last unbeaten squad within the division. We stick with girls high school basketball, but we'll move over to Emory High, where last night the Emory Lady Spartans easily defeated the Manti Templars by a final score of 77-34, moving to 3-0 in region play. Emory led 24-6 at the end of the first quarter, and they extended that lead to 47-18 at the break. Emory made a total of 29 field goals compared to just 13 for Manti. The Lady Spartans were led by Morgan Herdsman, who poured in a season-best 26 points, 12 of which came from beyond the three-point line. Caitlin Toomer scored 12 points. Megan Jensen finished with 11, and Kinley Toomer scored 10. Manti, on the flip side, was led by Cassidy Alder. She was the lone Templar to reach double figures, scoring 11 points. The Lady Spartans have had little competition so far this region season. After defeating South Sevier by 24 points, they topped Richfield by 27. Last night's 33-point win is the largest this far in league play. Emory will look to keep the wins rolling when they return to the court on Thursday to take on the North Stampede Hawks at home. Start time for that game is set for 7 p.m. We move to boys high school basketball, and tonight on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m., the Emory Spartan boys basketball team will take on the Manti Templars as both teams are in search of their first Region 15 win. Emory is coming off of back-to-back losses in league play, but a dominating 107-57 win over Carbon this past Saturday. Live coverage of tonight's contest will begin at 6:30 p.m. with the Landon's Diesel Service pregame show. It's there you'll hear from Emory head coach Todd Jeffs. Tip-off will follow shortly after at 7. You will also be able to listen to tonight's contest at CastleCountryRadio.com by clicking on the Emory Spartan link. Now, the Carbon High School boys basketball team will also return to the court tonight as they play host to the Union Cougars at 7 p.m. Tonight's contest was originally scheduled to take place in Roosevelt, but the venue has been changed and they will play at Carbon High. The boys right now are sitting at 1-3 in region play. Tonight's contest, it works as a big one as far as jockeying for position within the division goes. Again, live coverage will begin at 6:30 p.m. on KRPX 95.3 The Peak. Tip-off will follow shortly after at 7. You will be able to listen via the KRPX app as well. And we end by moving over to swimming. For the next couple of days, there will be an off period for both the Carbon and Emory swimming squad, but this weekend, both teams will participate in the Cedar Invitational. Earlier this week, I caught up with Carbon High School junior swimmer Casey Barrett. She talked about participating on the Carbon High School squad.
Swimming is just something that I've always felt good with. It's just there. My favorite is probably the competitiveness because you're put up against other swimmers that are better than you or are with you and stuff, and it just gives you that drive to push to be better.
You can watch this complete interview with Casey Barrett by visiting KOALITV.com. It's also there you'll find exclusive interviews with other athletes throughout the Castle Country. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Recording.
Hello, sports fans.
Time for sports.
Let the games begin.
Turn on the radio.
It's time to talk high school basketball on the Coach's Corner.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Going to talk local basketball. Coming up tonight right here on KOAL, the Emory Spartans will look for their first region victory of the 2018-2019 season. Suffered losses to South Sevier back in 2018 in December, and then suffered a loss to Richfield last Friday. Joining us right now over the phone to talk a little bit about that and about tonight's contest as well, we have Coach Todd Jeffs of the Emory Spartans. Coach, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, good to be on with you, Joe.
Yeah, so it's always fun. Always fun to talk some Emory High School basketball. And Coach, I know that Saturday was just an all-in-all dominating performance for this team, and we'll talk about that contest in just a moment. But if we go back over the weekend, Saturday's game has next to no meaning. It's Friday's game that's kind of the glaring loss. That's a four-point setback to the Richfield Wildcats in a game that was very odd, to say the least. I mean, down by 19 or 18 points midway through the third quarter, battle back, cut it to within four and have the basketball, but coming up short, it's a tough region loss.
Really tough loss for us. You know, we didn't shoot the ball real well, and Richfield shot extremely well. And, you know, to be even in a game where things kind of went that way, I felt pretty good about our guys, especially the way that, you know, we battled back. We didn't give up. We kept scraping and fighting. And truly gave ourselves a chance down the wire. I think at one point we were down four and shooting three free throws that could have cut it to, you know, a one-point game with still a minute or so left to go in the game, and then crazy things happened. But we didn't help ourselves out at the free throw line, and we definitely didn't help ourselves out shooting the three-point shot. I think the fourth quarter we made a little bit of a comeback, but through the meat of the game, we didn't shoot the ball very well at all. And for us to beat people consistently, we got to shoot that three ball. That's kind of what we're designed around.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you're going to win a lot of games. You're going to live and die by the three-point shot. Coach, as I go back and I reflect, I think you hit it right on the head with foul shots. I mean, 18 of 30. This is a good foul-shooting team. It's not as if these kids aren't capable. The majority of kids on this squad are very good at the foul line, and unfortunately, on Friday night, they just didn't drop. There was a lot of shots that were in and out, missed opportunities at the foul line. I thought kind of hampered the comeback.
Yeah, it really did. You know, and when you dig yourself a hole like that, you got to have every point you can muster, and we left way too many at the free throw line, and a little bit uncharacteristic of us. You know, we're a good shooting team and a good free throw shooting team, and for whatever reason that night they didn't fall down, and we paid for it. You know, we're sitting here 0-2 in league play, and couldn't imagine a worse start. But there's still a lot of basketball left to play, and the one thing that I really enjoy about competitive athletics is seeing, you know, how guys step up and how they face challenges and what they do with opportunities, and we've still got that ahead of us.
We can fast forward and talk about Saturday's game, a 107-57 win over Carbon. Coach, the second half, I mean, it was dynamic. That third quarter, it was lights out shooting from the field. I know that's what I guess, we kind of expect from this team, because they are capable of lighting it up from deep. But when you go back and you look at Saturday's game, how much does that help the confidence going into tonight's game against Manti?
Well, I think it helps a ton. Our kids are coming off two tough region losses that all of our guys, me included, really expected to win both those games. And, it kind of shakes your confidence a little bit, and you kind of question yourself and question what you're doing and question everything about the program, and really take an opportunity to kind of look inwardly and say, what should we be doing, and should we be doing things differently, and how should we be doing it? And then you come out and, basketball's a funny game, because if you shoot the ball well, everything seems to work. You're riding high when that ball goes in the basket, and when it doesn't, you really question everything in that's going on. And so to shoot the ball well and to say, hey, this is what we're trying to do, and this is what we want to do, and we're getting those good shots night in and night out. It's just a matter of knocking them down. Then, I think it's a kind of an emotional boost for us, and it was a rivalry game, and that's always nice to come up with something there too. So good night all around for us.
I've been of the mindset, Coach, with this team, that if Brody Tuttle is connecting, Emory's going to be very difficult to beat. And on Saturday night, he knocks down 5 3-point shots, scores 17 points. And we talked to Brody after the game, and he said it felt great for the shots to finally fall. And he's been around the rim. It's not as if Brody's been out of whack or anything, but the shots finally dropped. If he's knocking down anywhere from 12 to 15 points, whoever's playing Emory is going to have a very difficult time winning.
Well, I think you're exactly right, and I think he's the one guy that's really going to find open shots. I think, South Sevier, we play them down there, and they were to the extreme of anybody we've played, but they took Brody's man and just put him right in the middle of the paint to take away some of those driving opportunities from Braxton Kyson, and he was the man left open, and that night he didn't make shots, and then it's a struggle for us, and like you said, when he does, it's really it really changes things for us, and it changes the way that the defenses have to play.
Okay, we're being joined right now by Coach Todd Jeffs of the Emory Spartan basketball team. Coach, let's fast forward to tonight's game. Manti, 1-2 right now in league play. Their lone win is coming against Grand. They suffered a tough loss against San Juan. And the way the standings are setting up, I mean, there's so much emphasis on tonight's game, with Emory being 0-2 and Manti being 1-2. Two typically very good teams competing at the top of the region. Whoever falls short tonight is going to really put themselves in a hole.
Well, I think you're right, and I'm sure hope it's Manti that put themselves in the hole, not us. And, again, a lot of it's going to depend on how well we shoot the ball. And I really have a hard time overemphasizing to our guys, I don't want to put more pressure on them than there is. Just go out, play hard, have fun. It's just basketball. It's not rocket science or anything like that. It's just something that they've done their whole lives, and we just got to get on the floor, and when the shot opportunities come our way, then we knock them down. The one thing we've talked about this almost every time we've talked, Jordan, is the fact that Kate Brazier's coming back, and I don't want to, hang our hopes completely on him, but he is another shooter that is very capable, and I was glad in the Carbon game to get him some extended minutes there in the fourth quarter, and to get his feet wet a little bit and get his legs underneath him, and he looked a lot better in practice this week, and I think he's going to, provide us a little bit of a jolt from three-point land in the games coming.
Yeah, I was so happy to see Cade knock down a couple of shots, especially from deep. Coach, I was thinking all along that if Cade could just knock down a couple of these shots, I'm sure his attitude would change completely as well. I mean, that's a lot of pressure on a kid coming back from an injury. It's never fun. And once he gets back into his rhythm, I think things are going to be fine. Was Saturday's game a big step in that direction?
Huge step for him. I think, I got him 2 or 3 minutes and in a couple of different times against Richfield there, and he really looked uncomfortable and looked like he didn't even want to be on the floor. And when I first put him in Carbon, I think that you saw some of those same things. But the more he played in that fourth quarter, and the more trust he got in his legs, I think he really came a long ways. And this week in practice, you know, hadn't even really noticed him limping or favoring, that ankle at all. And so I think he's you know, hopefully turned the corner, and it's just kind of business as usual instead of wondering if it's going to happen. And so I think for him and for us, that's a big step forward.
Well, Coach, we'll go back to Manti here for a minute and talk about what we may see tonight. We always know that Manti is going to press at some point in time. But at the same time, they have four kids averaging double figures right now. And that's a great number. I mean, Adam Huff's leading the team at about 15 points per game. You have Grady Thompson, Mason Thompson, and Travis Thompson. All three of those kids are over 10 points per contest. So this is a team that has a variety of options. It just seems like a typical Manti team.
Well, I think it really is. You know, they don't have some of the size that they've had in the last couple of years. They're a little bit smaller, but they're really scrappy. They get after it. They're in a full court press you. They, you know, roll 10 bodies in and out of it at all times. Every time there's stoppage of play, it seems like they're putting two or three guys in and out of the game, and a bunch of guys that are really capable. I think, you know, the tough job is for you tonight, Jordan. I think they've got three Thompsons and three Clubs or three Chris Jansons. You're going to be tongue-tied the whole game trying to keep up with that end of it. But at the same time, you know, they're a tough team. They're scrappy, and we're looking forward to the challenge.
Coach, once we get past tonight's game, we don't want to look too far ahead, but there is a road contest on Friday as well against North St. Pete. And just breaking down the way things have shaped out so far, I don't know if there has been I know the next game's only as important as the current game, but at the same time, I don't know if there's a more important week for this basketball team playing a home and away game, still looking for that first region win.
Yeah, we've got to take care of business this week. We've got to get business taken care of here with Manti tonight, and then we look forward to North St. Pete on the road. North St. Pete's a team that can give us trouble because they've got size, and that's something that we struggle with, and they have some true post players that we haven't really been challenged by a whole lot of this year, and so we'll be kind of seeing how we can match up with some of that size as well. So big week for us, and we're excited to see where it goes. And, you know, we're going to show up and shoot the ball well and take care of business.
And I know around this time of the year, it kind of opens up. You can kind of tell what the competition looks like across the classification. If there was any doubt whatsoever that Region 15 wasn't the deepest front-to-back, there's no doubt now. As we've reached January, you know, in the second week of January, there's no question this is where the highest competition sits.
Well, I think you're exactly right. And I think there's, you know, I think throughout our region, top to bottom, anybody can beat anybody on any night. And you might look at it and say, well, North St. Pete's down a little bit, but they're a very good basketball team, and that size can bring an element that, you know, I think maybe Richfield's the only team that can match them size-wise in our region. And so it's extremely important for our guys to show up ready and to be up to those challenges and to be fierce on the rebounding end. And we just, you know, so much of us our success depends on those three-point shots falling. And so we've just got to keep shooting them and hope for the best.
Coach, it's always a pleasure to get you on. Thank you again for the time, and we'll see you tonight at the game.
Can't wait.
Yeah, me neither. That's Coach Todd Jeffs of the Emory Spartan Boys basketball team. Again, live coverage of tonight's tilt will begin at 6:30 p.m. with Landon's Diesel Service pregame show, and then tip-off is going to follow immediately after at 7. We'll pause for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. Today's Drive Time Sports high school featured player is Carbon High School senior wrestler Connor Fawcett. Connor is a part of the wrestling squad, which will return to action this weekend at the 3A duels in Richfield. During the interview, Connor talked about a number of different things, including wrestling at Carbon High School, being coached by his father, and how to stay healthy during a grueling wrestling season. Connor, it's a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you.
It's a pleasure to talk to you, too.
All right, we got to talk about the fact that you are Coach Brock Fawcett's son. You're a senior wrestler. I asked you, boy, you've probably been wrestling since you were old enough to walk, and that's kind of been the case, right, coming from the Fawcett family.
Of course, nearly 13 years as a wrestler so far.
What's the biggest life experience that you can pick up from wrestling on the mat?
Just really hard work and putting in the effort and getting out what you put into the sport and just how accomplishing it can be.
One of the things I'm amazed about with you wrestlers is the fact that you guys wrestle so frequently throughout the week. I mean, football, and you know about football. I mean, we're talking once a week. Wrestling, there are times you guys are wrestling four meets a week. So how do you make sure you stay healthy? I'm sure at some point in time of the season, you're going to endure some massive injuries. What's the key to staying healthy?
It's really just mental toughness, honestly. There's a lot of things that you can do to prevent injuries. Like, we stress heavily on conditioning and keeping your body fit and just in the peak performance. We also talk about nutrition. We are in a position where we have to cut a lot of weight, and we also still have to perform even though we're dehydrated and we just don't have a lot of energy. And it's really just difficult, and just comes down to if you want it more than the other guy.
Wrestling's got to be your favorite sport, right?
Of course.
What would be next?
I mean, I played football this year for the first time, and I wish I would have played it sooner for sure, but that'd probably be a close second.
How do they correlate? I mean, what can you pick up from football that you can use on the wrestling mat?
Probably a lot of footwork, and again, just that mental toughness, you know, being out on the field and taking hits, giving hits, and just dealing with it.
I got to ask you, what's it like to play for your dad? I mean, that's unique. Not a lot of people get that opportunity at the high school level, so what's that like?
It's a lot of pressure, because being the coach's son, everyone expects you to perform, but it's also really nice because you've always got your coach there to help you out, but you also have your dad there to kind of just coach you along, and just, it's good.
Last question before I let you go. Last year, you finished fourth in your weight class. What's it going to take this year to become a state champion? What are some of the steps that you know you have to take to climb that ladder?
Just working harder than the next guy. I've spent a lot of time in the off season trying to get better, and I'm trying to spend as much time this season to get better also, and just really putting in as much effort as possible to be the best wrestler that I can be.
Connor, thank you. Best of luck the rest of the way.
Thank you very much.
Again, that's Carbon High School senior wrestler Connor Fawcett. Today's Drive Time Sports featured high school athlete. You can watch this interview and others by visiting KOALITV.com. We have more Drive Time Sports straight ahead when we return on 107.3 FM and 750 AM KOAL.
Live from the KOAL newsroom in Price, Utah, it's Drive Time Sports on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Take that for data.
Back on Drive Time Sports, right here on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I want to talk college football, a little bit more of an abstract conversation. I can't get enough of college football. To me, it's the greatest sport in the world. I look forward to it every year. When it's over with, I get a little sad. We get around June, I start getting the itch for college football. And typically, we have more abstract conversations here on the show about it. I thought this was an interesting story. It was first reported by Adam Rittenberg of ESPN.com. That if college football coaches have their way, we're going to have a new rule next season, and targeting will no longer be an automatic ejection. I like this idea. I like this idea a lot. If there's two things in football right now that bug me, and I still don't really understand it, it's targeting. I don't know what targeting is. I mean, there are times I see what looks like a blatant player leading with his helmet, making contact, no flag. There are times where I think, okay, come on, the offensive player lowered his head. He created the contact. Still, the defensive player is getting thrown out of the game. And I ultimately think what bothers me most about targeting is the way the player is removed from the field. You're escorted off, be it by security or by a member of your training staff. You're escorted off the field. You can't just walk off. You have to be escorted off. And what bugged me about that is Dexter Lawrence, who we talked about at the beginning of the show. This kid fails a drug test. He's suspended for the semifinals. He's on the sideline in full team gear. He's talked about constantly about what a stud he is. He's going to be a first-round NFL draft pick. He could be on the sidelines for failing a drug test, but if you're called for targeting, even if it's not intentional, and you can tell if it's intentional or not, you can tell. Even if it's not gruesome, you're escorted off the field. I have a problem with that. Well, now according to Adam Rittenberg again of ESPN, the executive director of the American Football Coaches Association, which is Todd Berry, said that FBS coaches unanimously are supporting a new enforcement system for targeting calls during their annual meeting. Right now, again, players are ejected from the current game, suspended for the first half of the next game if the foul occurs in the second half. Coaches prefer a model with targeting one and targeting two calls. The targeting one call would be a 15-yard penalty with no ejection. Targeting two would result in an ejection. I'm in total support of this. Barry compared the system to flagrant fouls in the NBA. And flagrant fouls today are reviewable. And I have seen many occurrences so far this season where it's been reviewed. The officials have gone over. They've changed it from a flagrant two to a flagrant one or vice versa. And I don't think anybody has a problem with it. And I think if we talk soccer enough here on the show as well, you're talking about a red and yellow card system. It would decrease the number of ejections and suspensions throughout a college football season. Some coaches have suggested multiple targeting two penalties from the same player throughout a single season could result in a multi-game suspension, and I'm fine with that as well. But I also believe if we're going to go to the two-tier system, we need a clear definition of what's targeting. A clear definition. And one of the other things that bugs me about college football when I'm watching the game is that a hard hit does not necessarily mean it was targeting. It does not necessarily mean it's unnecessary roughness. I think we get too wrapped up in the sound that a hit makes, and we instantly think it's a penalty. And the crowd is guilty of it too, because we've been trained, right? We've been trained over the course of 5 years now, 5 or 6 years, however long it's been, that a hard hit means a flag. We don't celebrate hard hits anymore. The intent of the targeting penalty was to put an emphasis on malicious hits. That's what it was about, to make the game safer. And we'll talk more about that in just a moment. But that's why this was put in, to make the game safer. There's also unanimous support from the coaches at the meeting that this change will be implemented in time for next season. And if that's not the case, it would go in the 2020 campaign because an FBS conference has to submit a proposal to get the rule changed. So that could definitely shake things up a little bit. But they want to get this on the agenda by October, and look, to me, I think it's a stellar idea. Get it done now. Make it to where you have your levels. It's not an automatic ejection. I have seen targeting calls that warrant ejection. I have seen targeting calls where you just kind of slump over, shake your head. Really? This kid's getting ejected for that? That's number one on my list of abstract college football conversations. The next conversation I want to have surrounding college football revolves around kids leaving early for the NFL draft. Rarely am I going to say anything about a journalist on this show. Skip Bayless is a character. Skip Bayless, to me, is not a real analyst. He doesn't know how to analyze anything. He knows how to try to upset people. He knows how to try to push buttons, get clicks. That's what Skip Bayless does. He's a character. I think at one point in time, Skip Bayless was a fantastic journalist. He's beyond that point now. He's a hot take artist. That's what he is. He was bashing the NFL eligibility rules after watching Trevor Lawrence in the national championship game on Monday, and I was blown away at the amount of support that his insane tweet actually picked up. Here's what his tweet had to say. It's a shame the system will now force Trevor Lawrence to play 2 more years of college football, risking his knees and shoulders for Clemson after already winning a national championship. Of course, he is referring to the eligibility rules of going into the NFL draft. Trevor Lawrence has to play 2 more seasons at Clemson. And people believe that Trevor Lawrence should actually be able to go into the NFL draft this year. Now, I believe that Lawrence would be the number one pick based off ceiling, not based on current ability. Dwayne Haskins has more current NFL ability than Trevor Lawrence, and you can't convince me otherwise. And the reason being, Trevor Lawrence is 19 years old. He was playing high school football last season. I get that he just defeated Alabama. He had some receivers, make some outstanding plays, by the way. I mentioned Justin Ross yesterday. I got to give a shout-out to that kid again. That kid is going to be special for Clemson. But the idea that a 19-year-old kid should be playing in the NFL. So we just talked about targeting and how it's put in to make the game safer. And now we're talking about letting a 19-year-old kid play college football. Think about that. Or play NFL football, excuse me. Think about that for a moment. All the rules. We want to limit kickoffs. We move it up so the kickers can now boot the ball out of the back of the end zone on a 90% basis, because kickoffs, it's injury prone, right? Too many injuries on kickoffs. We want returners to down the football. You get it at the 25 if you down a touchback. That's to make sure we limit kickoff returns, because there's too many injuries there. You can't hit a quarterback below the knees. You can't hit a quarterback up top because we got to protect the quarterbacks. All these rules are put in to make the game safer. And you really want to have a discussion about letting a 19-year-old kid play football. There's a big difference from getting blindsided by a linebacker from Memphis compared to being blindsided by Khalil Mack or being thrown down to the ground by Aaron Donald or being clocked by Luke Kuechly, being blindsided by J.J. Watt. Give me a break. All the rules put in to make football safer, and people really want to have a discussion about letting 19-year-old kids declare for the NFL draft? They're not ready. Their bodies aren't ready. Their minds aren't ready. That's a stupid conversation. Two things that bug me about college football. Targeting, I think it's on the way to being fixed. And at the same time, talking about 19-year-old kids playing NFL football, give me a break. Well, we will take a break. One last break. We'll come back, put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports when we return.
Hey, this is Stephen Curry from the Golden State Warriors, number 30. And you listen to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 750 AM.
We're back to put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. It's a fun one today. A lot of local sports. Can never get enough of that. We'll talk more local sports on the show tomorrow as well. Do not forget, we have more local coming your way tonight. 6:30 p.m., Landon's Diesel Service pregame show right here on KOAL. The Emory Spartan boys basketball team will take on the Manti Templars. Highly important Region 15 contest. This division is so tough. I know we talked with Coach Jeffs about this earlier on in the day. This is a tough, tough league. Tough division. Emory right now at 0-2, Manti at 1-2. Richfield's at the top at 2-0, South Sevier hasn't lost yet either. I mean, really, I think the winner of this league is going to endure two, maybe even three losses. This is some highly competitive basketball, and I think when you take a look at the other two divisions in the boys' realm, you have about three or four teams. They have, I'm going to say three teams at the top that I'm going to view as legitimate championship contenders. I think maybe even Region 13 we have two. And then there's everyone else. That's not the case in Region 15. Whoever gets in as a five seed is going to make some noise. Now, this division is that good. We'll talk more about that on the Landon's Diesel Service pregame show tonight. Again, tip-off is set for 7 p.m. right here on KOAL. And don't forget, you can listen to the Emory Spartans live at CastleCountryRadio.com. You can listen to them anywhere, anytime, anywhere. Just go to CastleCountryRadio.com. Also tonight, the Carbon Dino Boys basketball team, they're going to return to the court. They will take on the Union Cougars. Last night, the Lady Dinos got a big win. Boys will try to do the same. This game will be on KRPX 95.3 The Peak. Live coverage at 6:30. Tip-off, again, is set for 7 o'clock. So a lot of local sports coming up. And, of course, we did highlight another athlete today, Connor Fawcett. If you've missed any of the local highlight athlete interviews that we have done, you can go to KOALITV.com right now, and you can watch them all. Something new that we're doing here. And, of course, like us on Facebook as well, KOAL's Drive Time Sports. On a national note, no Utah Jazz basketball tonight on KOAL. The Jazz playing host of the Orlando Magic. But because of the Emory game, tonight's Jazz contest has been bumped. And speaking of it, again, Christmas Day, I've said this multiple times, it kind of acts as the opening day in the NBA. It's a big, big day. MLK may be another day that you can kind of throw in that conversation. The Jazz right now, they've played better basketball as of late, still on the outside looking into the playoffs, but the West is so close. I mean, the Lakers have played terrible basketball since LeBron James went down. Right now, they're two games better than the Jazz for the final playoff spot. Portland, they've won 6 out of 10, haven't played great basketball. San Antonio and Houston have won 8 out of 10. Oklahoma City's played .500 basketball despite Paul George just playing out of his mind as of late. And the Denver Nuggets continue to play well at home, 16-3 at home at the Pepsi Center, taking advantage of home court. So the Western Conference is stacked, and I think we got about a 9-team race. Curious to see how Minnesota responds with the firing of Tom Thibodeau. But right now, I think it's a 9-team race for 8 spots. I really don't buy into Sacramento. I think Minnesota has the talent, but they're going through a lot right now. They've won 3 straight games, by the way. New Orleans, just a matter of time before they got to deal Anthony Davis. And once you get beyond New Orleans, you have Memphis, Dallas, Phoenix. Those aren't playoff squads. I think there's 9, maybe 10 teams at the most competing for 8 spots in the Western Conference. So the West has been pretty entertaining up to this point in time. Utah Jazz right now on the outside looking in. We'll try to get that moving in the right direction tonight. We are out of time on the show. Want to thank Coach Todd Jeffs for taking out the time to join us. Do not forget, Emory High School basketball is coming up tonight at 6:30 p.m. I will catch you tomorrow. Be safe. I'm out.